My name is Ignaz Forst. I'm a research engineer at SUSE, and I'm the maintainer of transactional updates. So maybe some of you have heard, watched, visited last year's talk at the OpenSUSE conference. So does anybody know what transactional updates are? Some of you? Okay, so I'll give a short introduction for the rest of you. And then I'll talk about the news, the new developments which were developed since last year's talk. So, as a research engineer, of course, one of my jobs is to also compare it with other products. And we've seen that Windows is one of those more popular products. And we try to see what are the essentials which are good for, which are popular in Windows. And we've seen that one of those core essences of Windows is it has to reboot constantly. So we thought, let's also do it on Linux. You don't seem too convinced. So yeah, we really try to do that, but yeah, let's see for the real reasons. With regular updates, we currently have a combination of Snapper and Zipper, which are operating on a BTRFS file system, if you're doing a default installation of OpenSUSE. What actually happens is you'll get a new snapshot of your currently running system, then the system is actually updated, and then you get a post-snapshot with the new state after the installation, so you can roll back if anything you did after the installation destroyed your system. So that's a good mechanic already, but we have one problem. We have that update in the currently running system. So if anything breaks during the update, you have actually destroyed your current system and you have to do a rollback to your previous snapshot, but your system is down for that time. So let's try to improve that. There are several distributions, not only OpenSUSE, providing transactional updates or atomic updates, how it's occasionally called, which all share that definition of a transactional update. A transactional update has to be atomic, so as I just said, it has to either be fully applied or not applied at all. And the update must not influence your currently running system. You don't want to have services restarted during the update or whatever else will happen during an update. The second criteria, the update can be rolled back. That's what we already have with our current Snapper and Zipper implementation. So that's nothing we have to take care about with transactional updates. So what's actually different with transactional updates? We still have our currently running system where that huge red arrow is pointing at. And whenever you are doing an update or any modification done by your package management software, a package installation or whatever, you'll get a new snapshot. And the update will then run in that new snapshot. So if you type transactional update dub, transactional update up or whatever, pkg in, you get those updates installed into that new snapshot, and the current system doesn't even know of that. So it just continues running and running and running, and as soon as you think, oh, the update is should now be applied, then you can actually reboot your system. That's the reboot trigger. Why is that? Because a reboot is an atomic thing. You have the guarantee that no process is actually running anymore if your system is rebooted. And you can safely boot into that new snapshot then. How is that actually done? BTRFS knows a default snapshot. So if you set, if the update was successful, the new, in that case, green snapshot will be set as the new default snapshot, and grub will just boot the default BTRFS, default BTRFS snapshot. So, that's actually what it is. If you want to try transactional update and haven't done it yet, you have a huge chance now if you're using lib15.0 because the update to lib15.1 may be one of those chances where you have major changes to the system where things may actually break. So you can just install transactional update and it will do the update in the background. You can just ensure everything's going smoothly without currently without destroying your currently running system. And if everything goes went smoothly, you can just reboot and you're in the new system. That's one use case which you can use. However, there's one exception. In that case, you would do that on a read-write file system. Usually, you use transactional updates in a read-only file system. I'll tell you about the implications in a few seconds. So let's have a look at the second part, what's new since last year. First of all, we still have our var directory. Var is not part of the root file system. So that means that it's also not part of the actual update. If packages try to modify var, you'd get changes to your currently running system, which is not what is intended to be done by a transactional update. So that's still the case. We won't mount, even bind mount, var into the update. If you're a package maintainer, you may have received a bug ticket by us. In the case you did actually modify files in var, those packages would have been incompatible with a transactional update, and in the last year we tried to resolve all the remaining packages where var modifications were still done in some PostScript or whatever. Currently we know about, it's meanwhile less than 30 packages which are still doing modifications to var. Some of them can't be solved easily because it's an architectural problem. But I think 30 packages out of 12,000 is a quite good ratio, so transactional update should be considered stable. If we missed something, please tell us. There's an easy way to tell us, to tell whether an update is actually did something which it was not supposed to be. Namely, transactional update will now print out files at the end of the update, which would be overmounted. So let's assume a change to var was done. It will print out the corresponding file which was changed in var. The same if a file was modified in your home directory or whatever. You'll get a list of those conflicting files which will not be seen in the running system after that. The second thing is etc handling. You may remember, if you heard the talk or if you're an active user, on a read-only file system, which we usually have with transactional updates, namely in MicroOS, in Cubic, or if you use the transactional server role in OpenSUSE, Tumbleweed, or Leap, etc is mounted as an overlay file system. Why is that? You still want to modify your configuration files. Those overlays are stored in varlib overlays, and the new thing since several months is each of those overlays, each snapshot gets one separate overlay or one new overlay. You may remember that all the overlays shared all the snapshots shared one common overlay, which obviously caused problems when trying to roll back because you then got a mix of all configuration, new configuration files and old snapshots. So we improved that. One interesting thing about those overlays is they are stacked. So if you apply a new update, you'll get that new overlay snapshot, which is transparent, and you'll see all the lower overlays. I'll show you what that actually means. That's an etc entry for the etc mount. And you can see several things here. Obviously, we're currently in snapshot number 18, which is part of the upper dir in red. And we have several lower dirs. We had a snapshot 16, 12, 10, 8, 7, 6, and we have the sysroot etc as the last entry. And you'll just accumulate changes in those overlays. So if you did something, let's say in overlay number 10, and if you didn't overwrite or change that file again in a new overlay, the file will be taken from overlay number 10. So, as I said, it's just transparent if you go down the stack. If you go up the stack, or if you roll back to a previous snapshot, the etc will only get until, let's say, snapshot number 12. So newer changes won't be visible. Of course, we don't want to have our stack growing infinitely. So what we actually did is we implemented a cleanup algorithm. Snapper will occasionally clean up your old snapshots. If the snapshot is not available anymore, you obviously also don't need the overlay for it anymore. So the snapshots will be synced onto the overlay will be synced onto the actual snapshot. But be aware that the state in the snapshot of etc is not consistent, or it doesn't represent anything. Only the combination of etc of the snapshot and the overlays stacked on top of each other gives the actual contents of etc. We have a few other things. Oliver contributed kexec as a reboot method. We have also support for QD as a reboot daemon now. If you want to use telemetry, you can use Intel's telemetrics. And new, we also have a documentation now. It's the transactional update guide, which can be found on the Cubic wiki, the link to the transactional update guide, or that's also a link if you want to use the presentation to click on it directly. Another thing that was requested at last year OSC was to get an option to influence the behavior of the super run. So we had interactive and non-interactive commands. By default, for example, if you type dub, which is supposed to be automatic, you also always got it in a non-interactive mode. And now you can just append the corresponding parameter if you think the option is not what you actually want, or if you want to resolve problems manually. If you just want to roll back to a previous good snapshot, you can just type transactional update rollback last now. And we support needs restart now. It's a, let's say, framework for indicating whether the system needs a reboot. If it does, transactional update, if any applications is using that, transactional update will now indicate the correct state. So, as I said, you have the perfect opportunity to test transactional update now with the update from lib 15 to 15.1. If you're interested in the etc and var behavior, or let's say the etc behavior, there's a very interesting talk tomorrow by Thorsten Kokuk where we will discuss the challenges which the etc handling has, especially considering the handling or the resetting of states. And we had several talks during this year's conference already. Some of them are the OpenSUSE MicroS talk and the OpenSUSE MicroS desktop talk by Richard, and the talk just before this one by Kimlin, why you should choose OpenSUSE Cubic, where you can see transactional update in use on those systems. So that's it basically. You can find us on cubic.opensuse.org. Transactional update is a part of the Cubic project, or you can find us in IRC, the link is below. So, I have, I guess, 1 minute left, don't I? Any questions? Yes? Transactional updates, whether transactional updates increase the security of the system, yes, when combined with the read-only root file system, because then you have the read-only root file system where the data can't be changed easily. Transactional update is the only supported update mechanism on read-only root file systems. You can't update it without interfering deeply into the system anyway. So yes, it's not transactional update itself, but the mechanisms behind it. Yeah. The question is about salt in combination with configuration. Yeah, is it possible to combine configuration changes and package changes at the same time? No, because salt doesn't know about transactional updates, so it can't install packages in a correct way. If you are just changing configuration files, that's no problem at all, because configuration is dynamic. If salt is only changing them, it can update the configuration. But yes, salt currently doesn't know about installing packages in a transactional update context, if you are not doing it manually, of course. So that's not possible directly. Does that answer your question? Ah, yeah, we should fix it. Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's discuss that off screen. Okay. So that's it from me, basically. Now that we successfully implemented Windows reboot methods, let's start with Blue Screens next. And thanks. That's my talk.